Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds gummy clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Because I didn't have that, and I think that if we built that, we would start to be able to parent differently and parent from a place where every person in the house is seen and every person in the house, emotions are all validated and everybody's allowed to have what you have, but we are in a space where we get to teach them how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and what that looks like.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. Today, I have a pretty deep conversation where there's going to be a lot of nuance in this conversation. But before we jump into the conversation, I'm going to let my guest introduce herself. And then we'll get started. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Chaz. It's very nice to have this opportunity to reconnect with you and to share some of the nuances of what my life taught me. My name is Paige Hyland, and I am the director and lead teacher of a school in Tallahassee, Florida. We're a private school. We go K-3 through 12th grade. Our demographic is, they call me the teacher of the D's because I do the ADD, the ADHD, ASD, PDD, SID, all the D's. If you got a D, you come see me. So we come and we hang out, and that's been my tribe, you know, for the last 25 years. And every day it's a new adventure, and I am very, very blessed to be able to do what I do.
Yeah. And I actually found Paige at a conscious discipline conference. She was a helper with me. My very first time being a helper, you might've seen it on my Instagram story. And I got to know Paige, and her story was so powerful that I just had to share it with y'all. So I brought her here, and really she has a lot to share on her knowledge about being a director, especially working with so many high needs kids. But I really wanted to bring her on to talk about her experience as a parent, because how long have you been, how old are your kids?
So my oldest is 31. He's in Atlanta. And then Joshua is 25. He's in Orlando. Abigail would have been 23. And Benjamin's 22, and he's in Tallahassee with me.
And how long have you been practicing conscious discipline? Kind of like, when did you start your conscious discipline journey?
So that was really kind of a unique thing for me, because when I was working at a school in the Tampa area, I had a couple parents and teachers that would come to me and say, you know, how long have you been doing conscious discipline? And I hadn't heard of it. I didn't know what they were talking about. So part of what conscious discipline does, I think, is something that I naturally wanted to do with the kids. But as far in terms of actually studying it and growing it and making it an intentional part of my day, I've been doing it since right before the pandemic. So 2018, 2019.
Yeah. But it's kind of the same case with me too. That's before I actually knew about the program and the framework. They really reached out to me and like, hey, we're really aligned with you. And really what conscious discipline is, it's really a compilation of a lot of people's research, a lot of people's work. And Dr. Becky Bailey really put it together and really put it in a way where it is more easily digestible and usable, and a lot of strategies she kind of put together that we now kind of call this framework, conscious discipline. But Paige had been kind of practicing some of these tenets, kind of some of these skills, and really been intentional about her own growth before she'd even found out about conscious discipline. And so, and you know, she had been really trying out a lot of things and with her children. And I really thought her story was valuable because it's something that I actually have heard a lot. I think her story is not one that is, you know, completely, there's definitely unique aspects, of course, but she's not alone in the story. I've heard a lot of people express this nuance that we're about to get into right now. And so with all that being said, with all that set up, you would just share, just kind of share your story, like your parenting journey. What was that like for you, and kind of what brought you to ultimately this topic that we are diving into right now, that I brought you on the podcast? Tell us your journey, because I think the journey getting there is really important.
Thank you. So I have four children, and I started my parenting journey the way everybody does, knowing absolutely nothing, but thinking that we know it all. You know, it's one thing to read the book. It's another thing to hold the baby. So I had two children that were tested gifted, you know, exceptional learning, which I also feel in and of itself is a learning disability in today's educational structure, because their brains aren't taught to, or, you know, in the same way either. So they have their own struggles. When you have somebody who's exceptionally gifted, because, you know, they may not be mathematically gifted, they may be musically gifted. And so there's lots of holes to fill in that journey. So it really, my desire to find a different way to show up for kids started with my so-called neurotypical children, who were, you know, what every, you know, we all got the little baby Einstein videos and watched them all because we were going to have the brilliant children. And I have, you know, my kids are smarter than I am. And that's, you know, scary when you know, you're like, you know more than I do. And, you know, and you have to let go of that and let them do their thing. And then when Benjamin was born, I think I almost knew right away that there was something different. When he was originally diagnosed, he was in that PDD umbrella before they made autism a spectrum. He wasn't verbal until he was almost five. He stimmed a lot. He talked in sound effects. So the movie Cars had come out and everything was zoom, zoom. And, you know, so, and he had struggled. He had a lot of frustration with, not being able to communicate, and that block that he had, and he would want something and we would spend 20 minutes trying to guess and figure it out. And so that was a struggle. And my, Joshua, Abigail, and Benjamin were all born in 4 years. I had three kids in 4 years. Don't do it, but it's a lot. You get very tired. But so in that moment, you know, there was always somebody potty training and there was always somebody learning to walk. And, you know, so those benchmarks, the kids were kind of making together, you know, in a pod. And then when we started to see the significant separation in emotional abilities, and that's really where Benjamin's autism started to show itself the most. He once started talking, it was brilliant. And he's very insightful, and he's, you know, an old soul in a sense, but emotionally it's very difficult. And I, like everyone else, followed the direction of people who said, you know, there were books and, you know, what to do. And I was never that parent that was making my own baby food. You know, I wasn't going to grow wheat in the backyard to make my own bread. Like that's not who I am. Mm-hmm. But people told me I needed to be that person in order to be a good autism mom. And that's what everybody was trying to tell me what to do, is how to be a good autism mom. And instead of telling us how to be a successful autism family. So we were not, the squeaky wheel gets the greased. And so our situations were really big, that it was all based on Benjamin's mood and Benjamin's ability to get from point A to point B, and what we did and what we ate and where we went, all was focused on making sure that Benjamin was getting what Benjamin needed. And I had three other children that if I had had the courage to parent the way that my gut told me to parent, I would have done things differently. But you're, so when you're told that your child is autistic, and then you have all this just massive amount of information, do it this way, do it that way, this is what you need to do, only have this lighting, they can only eat these foods, it's so overwhelming that you forget how to be emotionally supportive to your neurotypical children, because they can handle it. They can do it. They don't need you. They can make their own sandwich. They can do their own thing. And I let them. And that's probably my biggest regret as a parent, because I forgot that they needed me too. And I forgot that his diagnosis didn't need to be a family disability. To be was that, you know, if I could look at it like he has an allergy. So let's say he has an allergy to grass, right? So we would have to wear certain clothes or take medicine or whatever before we go. But that doesn't mean my other kids don't get to go in the grass.
Yeah.
But the way that we were living, can't do it. Nobody's doing it. We're not doing it. It's not fair. If Benjamin couldn't do it, I didn't realize until my daughter had a very hard conversation with me, told me that I was her child too. And we were getting ready to go. We were living in Orlando at the time, and we were getting ready to go to Disney Springs, which is Disney fun without the Disney ticket, right? Without the price. So we were going, we're going to walk around and go get go. And it was a thing. And Benjamin, you know, dug in deep and he didn't want to go. And so I was like, okay, well, we'll just do it another day. And she said, no, she said, you promised me we're going to go. I want to go. And I was like, well, we can't because of whatever. And she said, yes, we can. And she said, we count too. We matter too. And she said, when do you get to be my mom? Why are you all Benjamin's mom? And that took the air out of the room for me. And I turned around, and that was my kind of look in the mirror reflective moment of where I was so concerned that I would miss something to make Benjamin successful. I was not giving my other children what they needed to be in order for them to be successful, for them to learn to have friendships. And one of the things I learned most through my personal journey with conscious discipline, because it is us first. I have to be self-aware. I have to know who I am. I have to know how I handle my upsets and my struggles before I can teach somebody else how to navigate through theirs. And one of the biggest things that happened in that conversation and through those steps with Abigail was that I realized that through trying to make sure that Benjamin had everything that he needed, I wasn't letting her know that I was there for her too. And that the times that we say, and she would look at me and she would go, I hate him. And the first thing that we always say, he's not my friend, I don't like him. The first thing we say is, oh, yes, you do. He's your brother. Oh, yes, you do. You don't mean that. I now let them have the permission to say, I get it. The biggest gift I gave my kids is when they looked at me and said, I can't stand him. I don't want to do anything with them. I said, yes, I understand. I get it. It's hard. We are in this together and it's hard. And there are days that I don't like doing it either. But I had to stop telling them that their emotions weren't valid. I had to stop telling them that they did love their brother because there were probably days that they didn't. And I show them that even when you feel like that, we can get through to the other side. And that is what I want to do most for families that have dual neurosystems in their homes, right? So it's okay for them to say, you know, he always ruins the party, you know, or we can't go because, you know, Benjamin's going to ruin it, or we can't. So when I finally looked at my kids and said, you know what? I get it. It's all right. You don't have to love him every day. We do have to be respectful. We do have to be kind, you know, but you don't, I'm not going to tell you anymore that you have to love him. And I'm not going to tell you anymore to lie about your emotions and not be honest and true about how you're feeling, because then you get stuck. And I was forcing them to, you know, it's like going to grandma's. Be nice when you go into grandma and, you know, say something nice and do whatever is different than being respectful. You know, what if you don't like grandma? What if she scares you? You know, what if there's something about that relationship that isn't okay with your kids? So, what's wrong with us saying to our kids, you know, I don't like him on the playground? Okay, I understand that you don't like him, and that's, and you have every right to say that you don't want to play with him today. Got to have safe hands, got to have safe feet, got to use safe words, you know, but you can still say what you need to say. I'm not going to tell you anymore that you have to be somebody's friend. I'm not going to tell you anymore that you have to love your brother. Or if you tell me you don't, I'm not going to be that person that tells you that your emotions don't matter.
Yeah. And because when we say, no, you love your brother, like, don't say that. Like, it doesn't change
You
actually
don't
what
mean
they're
that.
feeling. And if they, if, you know, we over and over keep saying that, they might say, stop telling us what they're really feeling and what's really going on with them.
And they may not learn what that is, because how many times in conscious discipline do we say, I notice your face is like this and your body is like this? We're letting them know that they're giving us cues of how they're feeling inside. So if my kid, my daughter walks up to me and she's in a puddle of tears and she's so mad and frustrated and angry because she can't go be with her friends because her brother's a pain, right? And not functioning and helping in the house and whatever, then I'm teaching her that she can't be honest about how she's feeling.
Yeah.
What? What's that? What are we doing? You know, how? So then when she's in a dating relationship with somebody, or she's in a work situation with someone where she has to navigate around an uncomfortable person or a situation that's uncomfortable, I, as her mother, have taught her that her emotions are not valid.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to save the feelings of her brother, who, quite
Yeah.
frankly,
Yeah. Right. And even maybe inadvertently sending the message that like you are what you have to say about it, and your opinion doesn't matter, your emotions don't matter in this situation, and just suck it up and deal with it, as opposed to try and speak up or make your situation better, or try to, you know, maybe set a boundary, whatever that is. You know, instead
right.
of actually dealing with the conflict and dealing with the thing that is creating this these uncomfortable emotions, it's suppress it, ignore it, you're fine, get over it kind of message, right?
Instead of saying, oh, listen, I understand, right? Like, I know that we wanted to go. I know that I promised you that you could go. So now, if I could go back and redo those early years with them, I would have in my toolbox, you know, my parenting toolbox, a situation where, you know, I would, you know, maybe have a friend or their dad or somebody that I could say, So which situation do you want to handle? Do you want to take the other kids to the event, or do you want to stay home and handle the meltdown? Like, which one do you feel like doing today? And because I was divorced at the time, you know, I would not set up a situation to go somewhere or do something that had a lot of currency, emotional currency for my other kids, if I didn't know I had a plan B if he went sideways, right?
Yeah.
So we always planned to go, but as soon as things went, you know, crazy, we had to pack up and leave, and they weren't ready to leave. She's like, I'm not going. I came here to have fun. And she did. And she had a right to her childhood, and she had a right to be able to do that. Now, am I saying that I wanted us to leave, you know, separate lives and that we couldn't ever come together? No, there's certain situations where I think the blessing of having a neurodiverse home, right, is that I've learned so much from Benjamin about how much emotional energy we spend on things that really don't matter. And that I bring so much of that to the table, right? Because I brought my expectations. I brought my parenting, the things that I was always told as a girl and as a child, right? And I brought all of that with me when I looked at my daughter and told her that her emotions weren't valid.
Okay, so let me ask this. So your daughter, you're telling us a story about you're at Disney, the meltdown happens, right. Benjamin, and then, you know, you're like, okay, it's time to go. We got to change everything. She said, hey, no, be a mom to me too. Like, I matter as well. You kind of recognize you had a little moment of self-reflection. Right. What age did this happen? How old was she? How old was Benjamin? And then kind of like, what happened? Was that all it took to have a life-changing, you know, moment, and everything changed from there? Or like, were there, like, what steps did you take after that? What was that journey like?
Yeah, it would have been nice if I had, you know, woken up right then and said, oh, yes, you're right. No, we all packed up and got in the car. He was 10. She was 12, 11 and a half, 12. But what I didn't know is that she had, you know, talked to her little people. And so she had a little tribe of people that she was going to meet and go do her own thing. And I was interrupting all of that. What I did do 2 or 3 weeks after that, we were getting ready to do something else. And she said, I'm not going. Why are we doing this? Because we're just going to have to turn around and come home. I'd just rather stay home. And that was my, I get it. Because when she first said it to me, I was more focused on Benjamin's public meltdown and all the people that were staring at him and what they were thinking about my parenting. You know, the whole, if that were my kid, he just needs a good spanking and just tell him no. And right. So I was too messed up in my own emotions in that moment. But when we were in the calm of the house and she said, why are we bothering to go? Why are we doing this? We're just going to turn around and leave. Why are we pretending that we're going to have fun is exactly what she said.
Mm.
Why are we pretending that we're going to have fun? And I looked at her and I said, you know what? You are absolutely right. And I called a friend and I said, so the three of us want to go down the river and we want to get, I'm in rural Florida and we have rivers that just kind of go and we get in these big inner tubes and float down. Right. And that's big fun for us. So
yeah, I always wanted to do that. That's a bucket list thing for me. It does look so much fun, but go ahead, back to your story.
But it's an all day thing. And when you're in the middle of the river, if he decides that he's done and doesn't want to do it anymore, we're going. Like, you can't stop till you get to the end. And so I called my mom and said, I really like it if you can have a special day with Benjamin today. And I went, and the other three of us went down the river. We had a great time. It was a really good day. And then I started to realize that I didn't want to set it up so it was either Benjamin or the kids. It wasn't all of us. So then I had to teach the kids that there are certain things that we will do just us together, but there are certain things that we have to do in order for Benjamin to feel safe, because it's when he begins to feel out of that, that, you know, he goes down into the red zone and, you know, then everything's just a mess. Cause then I have all the kids in the red zone and I'm in the blue zone because I'm just wagging my finger and telling everybody, barking orders and telling everybody what we're going to do, cause we're going to have fun. And yeah. You know,
so you I heard a couple of things here, and I think we're going to bring this kind of back to the conscious discipline. We're talking about it more and more. More people are familiar with the survival state, the emotional state, and the executive state. And when you're talking about being in public and, you know, your daughter said this very real thing to you, but you couldn't really receive that information because you were in an emotional state yourself. You had that feeling of like you're being judged. And so when we are in that emotional state, our defenses are up. We're just protecting ourselves. And because we're so busy trying to protect ourselves, we're not open to new information. We're not open to learning. We're not open to shifting our perspective because we are so busy trying to protect ourselves in the judgment. And I think that's a powerful thing for you to notice. And I think that's just also something important to point out for so many, because so many of it, like that is such a common feeling and experience of, you know, things are happening and, you know, we're feeling like judged, we're feeling emotions are high, right. And so we're not open to learning. And these are really the moments, like there's so much happening in that moment that could be teaching us so much. But, you know, I find that like, even like for myself, that it's really hard to shift and do and change and do something in that moment. Sometimes I manage to do it, but what I can rely on a lot more effectively is after the moment and reflecting on it, and really when things get a little bit more quiet and being able to kind of like reflect, that is so much, you know, me being in my executive state, I am able to really see what happened maybe earlier that day or maybe an hour ago, and really see, this is what was really happening. This is what they were trying to communicate. I could have done this. I could have seen it differently.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, sometimes I'm able to shift in that moment when I'm in an emotional state, able to do that 5 steps of self-regulation so I can do that. But a lot of times, you know, it's definitely a lot more reliable after the moment in reflection for me. Is that, would you say, is that your experience or you have a different experience? Yeah.
So what I tell people now is, because when I do parenting coaching and with the parents for the kids at the school, you know, they'll have an example of a moment, and they're trying to teach while they're trying to lay down a lesson and teach this big thing while everybody's a mess. And I said, so what you have to do is you have to get through the moment. You've got to, you know, stop talking and breathe and just calm it down. And then maybe the next day at lunch, when we're sitting down, you can say, you know, when we did that thing yesterday, that got pretty, you know, that got pretty crazy, got pretty loud. These are things that I wish I had done differently. What are some things that you wish I would have done differently? And then you can talk about it without the judging without noticing, or noticing without judging. So then I can say, you know, I used some big words that I probably shouldn't have used yesterday, you know, and I'm really big about not saying I'm sorry, because I think that when you're saying I'm sorry, you're saying to yourself that you're not worthy. Instead of saying, I say different things, or I don't use my hands that way, or I don't, because then you're talking about an action and you're setting a goal for change, right? Yeah. For change who you are and what you want to be. So Benjamin will, because he works here at the school with us now, and it's amazing to watch him work with 4 and 5 year old spectrum kids. And because he'll sit down next to him and he'll go, I'm just going to stay here with you because I know how scared you are right now. Mm-hmm. And he just sits on the floor, sits next to him, doesn't say anything, not trying to teach him, and, you know, not trying to make him behave in a certain way. He just looks at him and says, I know you're scared and it's going to be okay. You're not alone. And I'll be here when, you know, we'll just sit through it. And he did that on his own. Like, I didn't tell him to do that. Just innately, he knew what the kids needed to hear him say to connect, right? To make, you know, that journey a thing for him. And he's me watching him. So I sat down with him one day and I said, what do you want me to do as your mom? What is it that I need to do as your mom? And he said, really, I just need you to teach me how to tie my shoes. Because it's a thing with spectrum, it's hard for them to learn how to tie their shoes, right?
Yeah.
So I said, okay. And he said, because I can't figure that one out. And he said, but all the rest of the things, I'm watching you so I can figure it out, but I can't learn to tie my shoes by watching you. Like everything else, he's so connected with the emotion of the room, which is why I think that with kids who are in the process of a meltdown, if the adult is still in, joins the meltdown, right, and becomes complicit in the meltdown, his ability to stay calm when somebody else is in a meltdown, watching him doing that, I've picked up, oh, I really just need to stand here with you. I don't have to tell you anything. I just need to look at you and go, you're safe. You're okay. We're going to make it. And then stop talking and just sit with them. Because, you know, I think that if we could, you know, look in the brains of a lot of what's going on, it would scare all of us, quite frankly, to death. Right. So like when you were talking about the kids that you worked with your last year of teaching and the struggle that you had with, was it the last year? When did you have the new person that came in with you? That you were trying, they wanted you to, were you subbing? What were you doing when you were subbing and the teacher didn't like the way that you were doing it? She had her own way to do it.
That sounds like a lot of experiences. I don't know exactly which one you're talking about.
And I probably put them all together and made them one. But after you spoke and you told us about how you had somebody who was just so dead set that what they were doing was right and the way they were doing it was right, how we came back to do that made me think of that's what I did with my kids, right? And that's what I did. I was so intent on being a great autism mom and being waving the banner, you know, that my kid is, you know, exceptional and better and, you know, all the things that we need to do, that was about me. That didn't have anything to do with Benjamin. About me being able to say, look at what a great autism mom I am. Look what a great autism warrior I am. It's his fight. It's not mine. It's his. And it's his journey. And then, so after talking to Abigail and the other, having people who said, you know, there's a right way to do it, there's a wrong way to do it, I think there's the way that you do it in your family is the best way. But I want to set up a place where neurotypical siblings can meet together and have a safe space to get together to talk about how they really feel about how their lives are changed and based upon their sibling, the one sibling that has the diagnosis. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be ASD. It could be a medical diagnosis. It could be something where that one child seems to be the one, because I think they need to have a space to say, you know, I don't like it. I'm not a fan. And I don't think that necessarily, you know, we have to pretend like it's a lot of fun all the time, because it's hard. Yeah. And it's hard for everybody.
Yeah. You said something I want to key in here and because you said that you're a divorced mom, you have four kids, and at a time where there wasn't a lot of as much social media and stuff like connection happening through social media, maybe that's a benefit. Like, how did you build, because you talked a little bit about like a support system. Can you talk to us a little bit about like how that support was with you? Obviously, a support in a community was something that was really needed for you. And you said something that you called a friend. So you had maybe a little bit of community here and there. So how did you build the community? Did you have a community? Well, what are your thoughts on creating a community? And because I'm a big believer in community care and that it really takes a village. And we're too segmented, we're too just in our own little pods. So
Up there, Lucy.
I think you have a lot to share on this, and I would just love to hear your perspective.
So no, there were no tribes. When Benjamin got diagnosed, it was still whispered, and people didn't, it was 20 years ago. So, people didn't really talk about it. And for his disadvantage, it was he's brilliant, right? But if you take his pencil, he'll bite you, right? Like, so it's they, I would constantly get pushback from the school or from teachers that would say, oh, he's not really autistic, because for them, autism was a nonverbal child that was self-harming all day, right? That's autistic kid. Benjamin's not autistic. Well, yes. So just even getting people to understand that, Einstein most likely was autistic, that brilliant, but every picture we've seen of the guy's never brushed his hair, right? Like this, so there, what used to be quirky was probably, a form of autism in some way. So we weren't, we were, Benjamin, I will tell you this, Benjamin, said he didn't want to go to school anymore in the second grade. He said he didn't want to go to school anymore. And I said, why? And he got in the car and he said, because I never get invited to the birthday parties. Everybody comes to school on Monday and talks about the birthday party, and I never get invited to the birthday parties. So, right. When your kid looks at you. And so then I got all mom mean, mom mad, right? And I was like, oh, my kid. And then it was when he started to be aware that he wasn't welcome, I became aware that that there wasn't a community outlet for him. So I built one. So the name of my school is Common Ground, because it doesn't matter what you are out there. When you come into my space, we are all on common ground. We are all in it together. I built what I didn't have. So, I want everybody to know that there's somebody that's going to be able to connect with you. There's somebody that you're going to be able to find. And God bless you. If you are the moms that want to make your own baby food and grow your own wheat, great. I'm not going to that meeting, but I'll go because I'm not doing that. But I will go to the meeting on, my daughter wants to have all her friends come over and spend the night. Can my son go to your house to spend the night that night so that he doesn't ruin their party, right? Like, so to be able to have those situations. And I want to have what we're trying to do at the school now is have parents' night out so the parents can go, the kids can come. And we do things with the kids so they have a social moment. So they have time to not be at school, but be with friends and figure out what that looks like for them, right? I would love to be able to be, church was the hardest place because you couldn't sit in a pew with them because he'd roll on the floor and pull all the paper out and do all the stuff. And you can't misbehave in church. That's the wrong place to have a behavior problem. And then you couldn't put them in the nursery because they weren't trained right, on how to deal with a kid who didn't want to do the craft because it was cotton and that blow up, right? So I would love to be able to be a space where you could come and bring your child to me Sunday morning or whenever your faith service is, and they can come and stay here. And then you get to go to church and you get to go do what you need to do with adults, and you get to have your time to get renewed and refilled and all the things that you need to do for yourself, while they are also still in a social situation where they get to do something and we get to come together, and then you come back green and regulated and filled and ready to go. So every moment of your day isn't, that's the community that in my dreams, that's my community. That's what I would love to be able to do, is have situations where we have social situations where they get to be social. We, you know, we'll have a dance, we'll, you know, cook food together, we'll watch movies, play games, do whatever. And their parents get to go and do non-meltdowny activities, right? Non-risky things, and go and do what they need to do so they can come back, because I didn't have that. And I think that if we built that, we would start to be able to parent differently and parent from a place where every person in the house is seen, and every person in the house, emotions are all validated, and everybody's allowed to have what you have. But we are in a space where we get to teach them how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and what that looks like. Because to watch Benjamin do his thing with his kids is because I gave him space to be able to figure out, you know, and I'm not trying to make him perfect. He's not going to be perfect. My neurotypical children aren't perfect. I'm not perfect, you know, and we're allowed to make mistakes. It's what you choose to do with it. You either, you know, you've got to grow through what you go through, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Got to grow through what you go through. So, I'm here. If you're in Tallahassee, go and reach out through Common Ground. Paige is her name. And maybe reach out, connect with her about trying to build that kind of community, or trying to be a part of that kind of community. If you're out there, not in Tallahassee, Florida, maybe you can be a part of starting your own, your own maybe neighborhood thing. You don't necessarily have to start your own school. Paige has probably gone above and beyond when it comes to creating community, up to the point where her son now has a community where he's not only working, but also excelling at, and it sounds like, you know, it's a place where they feel safe together, where you all feel safe. But try to, you know, maybe there's an opportunity, especially now with through Facebook, we can start to create some of these spaces that
that'd be great.
Paige just described. Now, you mentioned, I really want to, because it sounds like the big theme is like, okay, like there's got to be some kind of a balance here of like, of meeting the needs of the neurotypical children, meeting the needs of the neurodivergent children. And when you don't have that community, I think that's hard, because you're also, for you to even do that, even individually for a child, you have to learn how to take care of yourself and meet your own needs. And so, like, my question is, in all of that, and you just gave the example of, like, you know, you said the, you know, you're at second grade, he came home and said, I'm not invited to the birthday parties. And then you're also saying that, like, and my 16-year-old daughter also needs to be able to have her friends over for a sleepover, right, and feel like she has like a safe space to do that without like the blow-ups, interruptions, and feeling like she can just kind of be a, you know, neurotypical kid with neurotypical friends or whatever the case is. So how do you kind of negotiate that on a daily basis? Like, what can we keep in mind to make sure we're not excluding our neurodivergent child or ignoring or dismissing our neurotypical child?
So one of the things that I learned how to do is everybody gets a turn. So when I did sports with the kids, everybody got a season, right? Because I had four kids. There was no way I was going to four different ball fields and all that stuff, right? So whoever wanted to play soccer, we did soccer. Whoever wanted to do baseball, that's when we did baseball. But I couldn't do everything all the time. You have to be willing to not live the perfect life. You have to be willing to not have your house look okay with the, you know, there might be laundry that piles up, you know, because you're going to be exhausted. It's hard when you have, it's hard, especially because I was a single parent. Right. So it's hard when you want to be everything for everybody else. Like you said, there was nothing left for me. I was just, you just stop and then nobody's growing. And so I think that the first and best thing is if your child's at school, connect with other families and parents at school, try to build a small community. I have parents now that I still talk to that knew Benjamin when he was in first grade. And we still get together and we still do things. And those families that connected with us when we were still learning how to be an autism family are my greatest gifts, because they honest with me and said, look, let me do it. You know, let me come over, let me help you. You got to let people help you. As an autism mom, you don't want anybody else to share that burden. Share it. It's okay. We're okay. We got you.
You were saying some good points. I think you said, let people help you, take turns, build a small community. Are there any other kind of bullet points that you were saying there that I might have missed?
If you came to my house, you knew I had four children, two cats, a dog, and a full-time job.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?